It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
And a sure sign of things slowly getting back to what a new normal may be, Bill Moss is in the studio with us this morning for Lightning Radio. Good morning, Bill Moss. Happy Lightning Thursday to you.
Good morning. Happy to be back, all vaccinized and ready to go for the first in-person in-studio Lightning Radio in what, 14? 14 months
I'm going to say probably about 14 months.
Yeah, so, we were Skyping. But
that's right. Not to say that we won't do that again, because no. I'm sure you'd like to, you enjoy doing Lightning Radio in your pajamas.
I could still host in my jammies from time to time.
Exactly.
But don't have to worry about dog barking this time.
No, sir. Hey, let's get right to it, Bill. Another Lightning chock full of news and features this week. And it's on the streets in your mailboxes, and we're going to get behind the headlines this week on the radio. Let's start right here with the story you have on the front page. Bill to lower housing costs is called attack on local zoning.
Yes,
dive into this one for me, Bill. I'm curious.
I'll plunge right into it. State Senator Chuck Edwards is he's trying really hard, and he's direct and blunt, as we say in this lead here, when it comes to why he filed this bill, the details of which I'll give in just a second. But he says we are in a crisis. This won't be a surprise to anyone. We are in a crisis in North Carolina in terms of affordable housing. And it is rare, he says, that I speak to any group of folks where I'm not asked, what are we going to do about housing in the state? And his solution is not going over particularly well with the North Carolina League of Municipalities or, I would say, all the towns and cities in Henderson County and the region, because it pretty much undercuts, they say undermines or undercuts traditional conventional zoning, particularly single-family zoning, like a detached single-family home on a lot, whether it's a quarter-acre lot, half-acre lot, an acre or 2.5 acres. This bill would say under the state law of North Carolina that instead of just one single-family house, you could have something that the term of art now seems to be middle housing, not apartments, but a duplex, a triplex, a quadplex. Uh-huh. So this has sparked a firestorm of protest in Raleigh by the league, and here locally, the town of Laurel Park, the town of Flat Rock have met directly in person with Senator Edwards to say, basically, we don't like this. Please don't do this.
Wow. So what I'm hearing you say is that this is not just a Henderson County problem. This is a problem in the state.
Oh, absolutely. This is a statewide bill. It's not a local bill.
Yeah.
It would apply to every county. It would apply to every city. I'm still trying to clarify on the county. I think it may not apply to, say, Henderson County, which has plenty of zoning and plenty of single-family zoning, for that matter.
Yeah.
But some of Senator Edwards' point was the studies show that just with the amount of land left available and the price of a single-family home, that those are just priced out of the range of what most of the, yeah, the wage that most people are able to earn. We know that to be true here in Henderson County. So this is his effort to really require more dense housing. It's called Increased Housing Opportunities is the name of the bill, and this is his effort to solve that.
Did Senator Edwards anticipate this backlash?
I'm not sure he did anticipate this degree. He acknowledged it when what we covered was not that long, but probably a 15-minute presentation with a couple of questions before a really big turnout, Zoom-wise, of a meeting of the Land of Sky Regional Planning Council. So that was all of Henderson County, Buncombe County, Madison County, and Transylvania County. And they raised some objections somewhat mildly in that setting. It was cordial enough, but he acknowledged that this bill was causing heartburn on two fronts, what I just mentioned about the duplexes, et cetera. But also it puts an end to the conditional use zoning that we've heard a lot about and seen a lot about in our towns and counties here. It's become, for the most intense kinds of development, whether it's apartments, the asphalt plant is this way, the hotels downtown are this way, those all conditional use zoning. Okay. Which allows the city to impose all kinds of restrictions on sidewalks, playgrounds, lighting, noise, hours of operation, even whether or not you have a clubhouse, in the example of the Taproot Dairy development. So they're upset about that, too.
So where does it go from here?
To a couple committees. We looked it up and found that it had been withdrawn. I don't think for any reason that the bill was in trouble, but it I don't think it's had even its first committee hearing yet, and it better hurry up because crossover is, I believe, May 13th. And what I mean by crossover is that is when you have to have a bill to have passed fully one chamber or the other, the House or Senate, by that deadline in order for that bill to be considered really this year and next, because you recall now we're in the so-called long session, which is supposed to pass a two-year budget, and a bill that makes crossover this session can be considered this year or next.
Okay.
So it could, it's got a bumpy ride ahead, and he did acknowledge that he's open to some concessions, to some maybe some changes in this bill, and we'll see how great those are. One
okay.
possible example is, would you make this not apply to smaller towns? So if you said under 25,000, it wouldn't apply to any town in Henderson County.
Sure.
Because even Hendersonville is only 14,000 or 15,000.
Right, right. Well, it'll be interesting to see where this goes, and we'll stick with the lightning on it because I know you'll stick with this story. Let's stay on that same subject to a certain degree and go back to Crab Creek. Crab Creek community and homeowners have successfully delayed this zoning case. Tell us about that, Bill.
Yeah, this happened last week on, I think, last Wednesday. There was a case of, there was a zoning board of adjustment case, and a bunch of Crab Creek homeowners showed up, too many to be, more than could be allowed in the room, still under COVID restrictions. Most of them, all of them masked as far as I could tell. They said, their lawyer, John Knorr, said, well, for one thing, I can't find engineers about stormwater, engineers to talk about traffic, engineers to talk about lighting and noise and so forth, and to testify on 3 days' notice because I was just hired this past Friday. And we can't even get all of the interested homeowners in the room to talk about this mini storage project. So would you please postpone it? So they postponed it till, I think it's June 30th, because they said they already had a full agenda in May, and that gives the opponents lots more time to get their facts and case together to oppose this 125,000 square feet of mini storage units on 9.5 acres in a residential zone it's east of Camp Blue Star and west of Evans Road out
okay.
there.
Okay. All right. Interesting. On page three, there's a new Henderson County GOP chair. Tell us about this new appointment.
Yeah, you got a new Chelsea Walsh was elected. This was a while ago, but we just caught up with an interview, which we actually had to get. She had a Facebook announcement about it, and we got young Chelsea Walsh's priorities for Henderson County Republican Party. She wants to do lots of outreach. She wants to bring younger people in it. She wants to have a bigger tent while, she says, maintaining the goals of maintaining the goals and the principles of the party. So look for that coming up to hear more from Chelsea Walsh and her plans for especially the 2022 election cycle.
Okay. How long typically is that appointment as a chair of the GOP?
I think it's for 2 years,
okay.
And then it comes up in the March convention because
right.
Mary Guy had the job for
uh-huh.
for 4 or 6 years even
okay.
and got reelected, I think, but without opposition. So I think we can look for her for the next couple years
okay.
before she comes up again.
All right. Let's move on to page four, Bill. This is something we touched on last week because it was on your website but wasn't in the print version yet, and that is, of course, the 2021 Education Hall of Fame recipients that were honored this year.
Yeah, we did. That's right. We did talk about those, and those were Nancy Carolyn Edwards and Marv Larson, who both of us know from Terrific Kids
yeah.
with the Kiwanis Club for many, many years,
yeah.
and lots of other volunteering as well. and Frederick Wayne Morgan, who spent 28 years in the Henderson County Public Schools at East Henderson High School as a health and phys ed teacher. So congratulations to those Hall of Fame inductees.
Fantastic. We're going to take a break now, but we've got lots more coming up on Lightning Radio with Bill Moss. We're going to talk about the state of music. We're going to talk about Southern Appalachians 10 years and Dish on Dining. That is all coming up on Lightning Radio with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com.
Kaysen Builder Supply, the official sponsor of patio season, providing quality landscape and masonry materials, exceptional customer service, and superior delivery from locations in East Flat Rock, Brevard, and Greer. Now is the time to prepare for patio season with a visit to Kaysen Builder Supply in East Flat Rock to see displays of outdoor rooms, pavers, retaining walls, and fire pits. Kaysen Builder Supply, providing exceptional service for over 40 years. The official sponsor of patio season. KaysenCompaniesInc.com.
And we are back with Lightning Radio here on The Q. The lightning is on the streets. It's in your mailboxes, and it's Thursday, which means it's on the radio with Bill Moss. Bill, let's touch on your editorial this week. I've heard you say this in presentations all around the community. They said we wouldn't last 10 days, when actually you are truly the future of print media.
Yeah, we've been called that by Forbes magazine back in 2015. They came and did a profile, and people still were saying we wouldn't make it 5 minutes, 5 weeks, or 5 years, and we made it 5 years. But the saying in the talk, usually is that people said we wouldn't last 10 days, 10 weeks, or 10 months, and here we are, having had our ninth birthday with the go-live of the website being on April 24 of 2012 and debuting the print issue on May 9, so we're right in between those two anniversaries, and starting on year 10. So we thought we've done this. I think this is actually the third time we've kind of done a column around the broader topic of why we made the lightning. And it's the shining light column. People can read all about how this got initiated and things that have happened since then and how we're glad. So thank you, we say, for making the first 9 years a rewarding and fulfilling adventure. As we march on toward double digits, I continue to be grateful for and humbled by the support you've given us with thoughtful praise, encouraging words, and loyal readership.
Yeah, loyal readership, absolutely. And, Bill, I've said this many times. I knew we were doing the right thing here at WTZQ when about 10 years ago you called a meeting with me and you said, Mark, keep this hush, but here's what I'm doing. And I want to figure out a way to partner with you and WTZQ and work together. I left that meeting saying to myself, Bill Moss came to us. We must be doing something right. So we appreciate the partnership we've had with you with these years, and we look forward to many, many more years.
I guess we've had close to 500 shows.
I guess we have, haven't we? Wow, that's hard to believe, isn't it? All right, let's talk about the state of music. David Holt's State of Music, finding a home in the Blue Ridge this season. That's on the front page.
Yeah,
and
look for this debuting tonight. It's supposed to come on tonight at 9:30 at night, I think, on your local WUNC TV station. And the cool thing about it is, whether you're all that interested in kind of roots music, blues music, bluegrass music, old-time music, all of that good stuff that's always covered in David Holt's State of Music, you're going to feel like you're watching home, because it is home. They figured out that they needed to do something different and safe and creative in the COVID-19 environment throughout all of 2020. So they filmed all six shows of this season in Buncombe and Henderson County. And so would you like to hear where?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, the first one, they decided to film that at Kay Youngblood's house, what is the name of that? The Innisfree Farm out on Rugby Road, which is a big bed and breakfast. You might have heard of that.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's where they filmed tonight's premiere with Keb Moe. Keb Moe was here, short for Kevin Moore. So that was a fun thing. We interviewed Will McIntyre, who's the producer, along with Denny, of the series and also a camera operator. And Will told us, Keb Moe, rather than take an entire crew over to Nashville, we talked to him and said, hey, would you be willing to come to Henderson County? His wife, Robbie, and his son spent 3 days in Henderson County and absolutely loved it. And
I wish I had known that. I love Keb Mo.
Well, you'll see him tonight on TV.
I will see that, absolutely.
And you'll be looking at Rugby Road as well. And the fourth episode, profiling Muriel Anderson, was shot at Pinebrook Manor Inn. That is the historic home on Canoga Road that was once a home of Margaret and Igor Pardee, you might recall.
Yep.
It had kind of fallen into not ruin, but not the best of times when it was bought and restored by Melanie and Graham McPherson. And they did a wonderful job hosting that shoot. She loved it, McIntyre said of Muriel Anderson, her visit. She lives part of the time in New York and part of the time in Nashville. And you'll be interested in this as well, as how Muriel Anderson, what are her bona fides? Chet Atkins introduced David Holt and Muriel years ago when Chet said, "You need to listen to this girl play guitar."
Oh, boy.
hard to get a better endorsement than that.
Than a Chet Atkins endorsement, right.
And then finally, the last show of the season featuring Rob Ikes and Trey Hensley, that made a set out of the Jeter Mountain Farm, also recently bought in the past several years and restored by a farm family from down in Southwest Florida. They bought the farm. The Hunsader tomato farm and family bought the Jeter Mountain Farm in 2011 and made that huge barn a huge event space.
Yep.
And, of course, they're harvesting apples, and they have all kinds of events and sales of produce and stuff out there.
Yeah.
So that family loved the music. And because of COVID, we were able to get that entire huge barn, Will told us. And a place like that, you can really spread out and made for a good show. Mm-hmm. Other episodes filmed next door in Buncombe were Zoe and Cloyd, filmed at Timber Hall in Leicester. John McCutcheon filmed at Paralandra Studios in Asheville. And Lakota John and Trey Wellington filmed at Timber Hall in Asheville, a site in Fairview and in Johnson City, Tennessee. So look for that premiering tonight. David Holt's State of Music.
Fantastic. Speaking of celebrating, you and I just were this past Friday at the 10th anniversary and 10th birthday party for the pioneering brewery, Southern Appalachian Brewery, here in Hendersonville, celebrating their 10th anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I always think it's interesting that there are other pioneering establishments besides, other than the Lightning, about the same age of the Lightning, and has been, we hope, contributors and done a lot for the community. And certainly Southern Appalachian Brewing Company is one, and St. Paul Mountain Vineyard is another, almost exactly was getting started when we were getting started. Now, Southern App started with a bang, had more customers than they ever thought they would.
Yeah.
280, I think it was, that 282 people they had on the first day. She said, we were not ready. She said, Kelly told us, I still have two shoeboxes full of cards people never picked up. And what were those cards?
Well, if
membership cards.
Yes, because the laws had not changed yet.
That's the law had not changed.
They had to be a private club because they weren't serving food.
That's right.
So it cost you a dollar to be a member, if I recall.
A membership card was a dollar for the Music Appreciation Club.
Yes.
And I don't know if you do, but I don't recall ever having a single discussion about music while we were quaffing a Copperhead or an IPA.
Not a whole lot. And again, I had a chance to interview Kelly last week, and not only were they a pioneer as far as breweries are concerned here in Hendersonville, but also they are pioneering the 7th Avenue District because they were one of the first to go there and start really bringing traffic down to 7th Avenue.
They were there before Underground Bakery. They were obviously there before Triskelion, and they were there before Guidon, just up the hill from them. They were before lots of other stuff that has popped up and has continued to and will continue with that streetscape improvement that's coming up later this year. We'll continue to improve and revitalize the historic 7th Avenue. And, you know, they were pioneers in what just about every microbrewery is now, of taking an old space like Dry Falls did, like Ocklawaha Brewing Company did. Triskelion's one of the few to build an entirely new structure and space, which is nice, of course. They pioneered the idea of just enjoying the outside with your children, with your dog running around. You know, that's just common part of our culture and our experience now. But then it was new, and it was just so exciting.
You and I have kids the same age. Can you imagine being young parents with kids and being able to go to something like that and give the kids chalk and let them draw all over the pavement while you sit and enjoy and have fun with your friends?
Exactly.
I would have loved that.
And see other kids. You know, it's an adult park.
Right.
It's
right,
an adult park where you can be there, enjoy your kids and dogs and fellowship with other kids and other dogs.
So one of the funny twists on this is I was asking Kelly when we were talking. I said, Kelly, why is it that you chose Hendersonville? And she said, well, it's very interesting you say that. We were originally going to open in Asheville, but we realized that we would have been the seventh brewery to open in Asheville at that point in time.
Yeah.
She said, now look, we're one of five in just downtown Hendersonville.
And 12 in Henderson County.
Wow.
While there's around 22 to 24 in Buncombe County. I mean, in 10 short years, we've actually... I mean, not entirely caught up, but by per capita breweries almost caught up in terms with Asheville Beer City USA.
Yeah,
with 12 of these darn things, and I asked that question as well. That what about competition and diluting, you know, the amount of pints sold per hour or however you measure it? He said, you know, you have to take out everything that happened in the COVID year. But before that, he said, no, we didn't see it. You know, there's beer tourists, there's younger people all the time, and they have a good reputation for the quality of their pints.
I asked the owner of Blue Ghost Brewery once, and I said, do you find that it's competition to have so many other breweries? And he said, Mark, you either want to be the only one or you want to be one of many. Because if you're one of many, it becomes a destination. And people are going to come see you just because they want to taste all the beers and go to all the different breweries.
Yeah, and we've said this 1,000 times also in Libation Nation discussion is they don't have to all compete necessarily for this limited pool of craft beer drinkers because they're creating craft beer drinkers from the old domestic beer. They're creating new craft beer drinkers all the time. In other words, the pool is expanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's people traveling in. That expands part of it. But people already here, like, they switch from Budweiser, Miller Lite to, I want a Southern App or I want a Triskelion or I want a Dry Falls beer today.
Yep, absolutely. So, again, congratulations to Kelly and Andy and Southern Appalachian Brewery for celebrating their 10th anniversary. Something else that's growing, and that is, of course, options for dining in Henderson County, either new options or changing options. So let's do our dish on dining, Bill, with our last moments here.
Yeah,
lots of dining news.
Yeah, one of four stores, if you count Libation Nation, that's just beer and not food. Well, they have plenty of food trucks there,
sure,
as a matter of fact. But we got a tip from our friend, a postmaster. Thank you for the tip, Kathy, of East Flat Rock Post Office. It said you might know what is that construction going on in the old Sonic property. So the Lightning did what the Lightning does and checked out the tip and found out that we are getting a second Dunkin' Donuts in that site. So that's going up fast. Look for that to open midsummer or so. I think it's being operated by, looked like, Aziz Zefri. I think he's the same franchisee of the first one. And Aziz says, we have seen a lot of growth in Hendersonville and want to offer those traveling down I-26 and visitors to the area an opportunity to quickly and easily pick up their favorite cup of coffee, and not to mention lots and lots of donuts.
Mm-hmm. All right. So a second, and Mike, I say good luck to them, but I find it interesting that we're opening some new restaurants or dining establishments, and when the ones we currently have are having a difficult time getting people to work.
Absolutely. Topic of a front page story in the Lightning 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah.
It's a big, big issue, and it's not getting better yet, because while you have a kind of a stagnant labor pool for a variety of reasons we talked about, you have more and more jobs because of the reopening. And now what you're talking about is new things reopening, whether it's the new Chick-fil-A, the new Dunkin' Donuts. In fact, I was thinking of the Dario. There's a Dario supposed to be opening in the Triangle of Property.
I've been meaning to ask you about that.
Well, I think they're probably waiting. There's no sign that they've pulled out as far as I know. But I keep, we need to bird dog that one as well. But lots of restaurant jobs for a shrinking pool of applicants, apparently.
And while we're on that subject, I know we got some more dish on dining to go, but while we're on that subject, you know, I hear a lot of people say that people aren't going to work because they're being paid to stay at home. I get some of that, but people need to realize we were having this issue before COVID ever hit.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were having this issue before COVID hit, meaning we were having it before there was a more attractive, say, unemployment benefit situation.
Yeah.
But all of those factors, and it's not just people wanting to be paid to stay home. A lot of these are single mothers, or even if they're not single, they're moms that because of the, even if they're back in school now, there's so much on again, off again situation with what's going to be open. Is a summer camp going to be open? Is what the children do in the summer? Maybe the mom's going to have to stay home with them still because the usual options for daycare aren't necessarily available or aren't available in the same way they have been.
Right.
There's a lot of factors to the labor problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about a restaurant that's been doing well and has taken this time to change things around, and that's Two Guys. They're now Peace Pizza and vegan-based with a lot of the traditional things that they originally had on their menu.
Yeah, that if you say you are a place called Two Guys Pizza and Ribs with a lot of sausage and a lot of chicken and chicken wings and a lot of pepperoni on your pizza, if you say you're going to rebrand as vegan, that's a big change. So look for that in the on May 5. Oh, I guess
yesterday.
That happened this week.
Yep.
It's going to be open. It was open that day. Oh, it's going to be open, continue to be open, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday through Saturdays. People know you talk about on-site, just like Kelly and Andy Cubbin. On-site all the time. You go in there, Melody and John Crawford, their kids work there and have for years and years. They listened to Son Christian, who got very interested in a new documentary called Seaspiracy. I guess it's about maybe unethical or unpleasant conditions of fishing. And they started out, this was interesting, they started out just taking shrimp off the menu. And the idea got, shall we say, more jumbo from there and covered all of the meat. So that's going to be, you talk about, you know, niche. That'll be something that, as far as I know, we don't have vegan-only based pizza. There was one of these that opened out in Horseshoe about 4 or 5 years ago, but I don't think it lasted.
Okay. I was there yesterday to see John and Melanie and congratulate them, and I saw some good-looking food coming out of that kitchen.
Oh yeah. I think there's definitely a market for this.
Yeah.
And because they are so good at service, and it's a friendly place, and they have a lot of nice outdoor space, that's down on 7th Avenue, just on the town side of Lowe's, if you want to check that out. So they're in business and they're going.
Absolutely. And John told me yesterday, he said, we decided to take the big plunge, you know, changing the menu to all vegan and changing our hours to only be open Wednesday through Sunday.
I noticed that, too. That made me think of? Labor.
Labor. And they said, you know what? We just want to have a life. We want to be able to go and do things. So congratulations to them. Let's hit one more dish on dining before we finish up, Bill. And that's the Saluda Sweet Shop, which is opening now.
Yeah, well, we should finish up with dessert, I guess. That's the right order of things,
yes,
isn't it?
Exactly.
So they open the Saluda's Sweet Shop. They show, I know, some community activists, and maybe the rest of them are managers. I'm not sure. Bruce Hunt, I know he's active in the community. And Saluda community, Judy Ward is all over everything down there. And Carolyn Ashburn, they pose in the new Saluda Sweet Shop in the historic train depot there in beautiful downtown, historic train town, Saluda. They say when Duck Alley closed last fall, we saw this as an opportunity to take over the Hershey's ice cream contract and provide the nonprofit depot a means to produce a revenue stream. And they said that's been badly needed with the income drop from obviously the COVID-19 lockdowns and challenges. So check that out. Current hours there are 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday through Saturday and 1 to 4 Sunday, and the hope is to extend to add Monday and Tuesday once another employee. There you go, the broken record once again.
Uh-huh.
Once another employee is hired to cover those days.
Bam.
So Saluda Historic Depot, 32 West Main Street. Get you a sweet treat.
Fantastic. Bill, there's so much more in this week's Lightning. People need to pick up their copy and dive even deeper into it. How do they get their copy?
Well, if they are vaccinized, they go out of the house and outdoors to one of the 60 news racks around Henderson County. Or if you're not, you can wear a mask and do the same. Or visit some of the popular coffee shops or convenience stores or other dealer partners that stock Hendersonville Lightning. Or by visiting HendersonvilleLightning.com and clicking on subscribe, and that will walk you through how to join the growing legions of Lightning fans that get their Lightning today, going on 10 years, and join those Lightning fans, or by calling Jan at 698-0407.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.